Hey, Trey, when you start breaking down an expectations for a team or a conference for an upcoming season, you know, what do you look for? For me, it starts with when I'm trying to measure what a team could be successful-wise, I look at the returning starters and the returning talent on the offensive line. The same thing applies to, like, the front seven on the defensive side of the ball. For me, I don't care what kind of great weapons you have. If you can't keep the opposing team's defense off of you, or the same thing, if you can't get pressure on a quarterback, it's not going to matter anyway. How do you start when you start looking at teams and the potential that they may have in an upcoming year?
I think generally, you know, you're on the right track with the returning starters. I would probably admit that I don't take as deep of a look into the lines as you might. I kind of honestly look at, obviously I'm going to give you a cop-out and go quarterback and then talent. For instance, you can be a young team, like a Texas, for instance, that's had two top number three overall recruiting classes, and they're going to be really talented, but they only have two returning starters on defense. So sometimes returning starters don't tell the whole story. I like to look at, like, what's your recruiting history in the last 3 years, last 4 years, and then quarterback. But, yeah, I mean, trenches are definitely important. And, you know, would that make me concerned about Alabama, for instance, defensively this year? Maybe. I don't know.
When you think about the season, I was talking about this last year. I was looking at the road for the teams that made the college football playoffs, including Clemson, and I talked about how, you know, the ACC, you know, it's different when you're talking about Florida State being strong or even another program. I'm waiting for somebody else. I mean, there's a lot of good teams and above-average teams in the ACC. But as far as great teams, you've got Clemson and then everybody else. I think that from a standpoint of, you know, watching what they have to overcome obstacle-wise, it's so smaller compared to, say, the team that emerges, for example, from the SEC.
Yeah, Clemson's schedule is cake. The ACC is hot garbage, and you're looking at, like, you look at the Atlantic Division for Clemson, and it's like Florida State and Syracuse. Like, Florida State didn't make a bowl game last year, and then on the other division, those teams, it's like a Miami, Virginia Tech, Virginia battle to just get curb stomped by Clemson in the title game. Now, the Tigers do have A&M in Week 2. And, of course, they play South Carolina at the end of the season. So they do have a little bit of an SEC flair. But, no, I mean, the ACC is the worst Power 5 conference in football, in my opinion. So it's not close as far as what Clemson has to go through compared to the gauntlet that a Georgia or an Alabama and Auburn and LSU runs. But, hey, I mean, we saw what Clemson did to Alabama last year, heads up. So I don't know if it matters that much, does it?
See, that's a part that when Clemson and Florida State were rocking and rolling, and, you know, you also can you know, include in that mix, we had 2 years ago, the Hurricanes of Miami was thinking about, and they had certainly the possibility of being one of those four playoff teams in the month of November. You would think that everybody else would, you know, rise to the occasion. And once again, we are talking about a lot of bowl-eligible teams. We're just not talking about it being on the same level as, say, what Clemson and as Florida State, even unlike last year, what they've done in the past as well.
Yeah, I think a few years ago we all thought the ACC was making really good coaching hires and was about to start surging. You look at Miami, they had things going under Mark Richt. Obviously, that fell apart. You look at Virginia Tech, we all thought Justin Fuente was a home run hire, and now he's kind of a year away maybe from being on the hot seat. Florida State, of course, loses Jimbo Fisher. So I think coaching's everything, and who knows, like maybe this latest batch of ACC coaching hires is what they needed. Manny Diaz is probably going to invigorate Miami, Jeff Collins down in Atlanta, at Georgia Tech, Mac Brown kind of putting the band back together in Chapel Hill. But the ACC, it's pretty embarrassing, to be honest, and it's great. Like, you have bowl teams. Cool. Like, everyone else has bowl teams. But I'd like to see the ACC take a step up this year and stop riding Clemson's coattails.
I would like to see what happens with Georgia Tech moving forward, you know, as far as with the transition with the new coach and everything else going on there. I'll be really intrigued to see what we'll be saying about Georgia Tech in, say, 3 years from now.
Yeah, they're recruiting really well. You kind of figured Jeff Collins could do that. And Atlanta, you really had no excuse not to recruit well. And I know that Paul Johnson's offense wasn't something that would be attractive to a top-level recruit. But I think if Georgia Tech can prove on the field this year that can be competitive, and we'll see early on. They play Clemson in week one on a Thursday night, I believe. I think Georgia Tech could really build something down there, though. You're one of the most fertile hotbeds in the country, and in fact, I'm looking up right now on 24/7. Yeah, they have the number 21 recruiting class in the country. So we'll see. You know, he did a really good job at Temple, and that's compared to last year. Georgia Tech had the number 51 class, so it's probably not going to be close as far as the talent they're bringing in.
Trey Scott, he's the National College Football Editor with 24/7 Sports, joining us last year during SEC Media Days in my one-on-one with Gus Malzahn. You know, I was really surprised because a lot of coaches in those situations, they keep everything close to the vest. He wasn't hesitant to really talk about how he's looking forward to the next 5 years and he was looking at a period of what we'll be talking about, maybe the best 5 years in Auburn's college football history. And then we get last year, we're midway through the season. You know, he was on the hot seat. People were talking about ways that they could possibly buy his contract out that he had just renewed and extended. And so I bring it up because when we have expectations in a positive way about Auburn, they underperform. When we don't have those expectations, they surprise everybody. So based on that, this means that probably what Auburn could win the SEC West this year, especially since they're hosting Alabama in the Iron Bowl, right?
Well, you're so right. We do this every year with Gus Malzahn and Auburn, and they always defy our expectations, whatever they were. In 2017, we said this could be Gus's last year, and I think they win 10 games. Yeah, they played in the SEC title game, and of course, last year was disappointing. Auburn has, John, you talked about, the first question with me was the trench play. Auburn has one of the best offensive lines in college football and one of the best defensive lines in college football. They've got two guys at quarterback and Joey Gatewood and Bo Nix. I think we're going to see both of them against Oregon in week one. But two guys who could be legitimately pretty good SEC starting quarterbacks, you know, if the trench play is enough, and if you get decent to good quarterback play, absolutely Auburn can make some noise.
You know, Gus Malzahn, he has to be careful about, you know, going with the same guy. He sometimes overutilizes, say, a running back that he falls in love with. And they've got enough talent there to keep everybody fresh throughout the season. But as long as he can avoid that mistake, then, you know, this team has a lot of potential. You know, I was asked earlier this year, I was visiting with a radio station on a different market, and I was asked who do I believe could rival Alabama in the West this year. And you immediately think about the potential of LSU, Auburn, Texas A&M. I don't necessarily think it's going to be one team. I think that depending on what time of year we're talking about, all three of those teams could be in that conversation.
You kind of think someone can knock Alabama off, sort of, you know, maybe one team gets a lick in. Like, I'm looking at Alabama's schedule right now because you're talking about it. Like, October they play A&M, you know, in College Station. A month later they get LSU. A month later they get Auburn. So, yeah, maybe Alabama's tired by that point. I would probably go LSU. LSU's got as much talent in college football as anyone.
Well, if you don't believe that, just ask the fans. I was talking about, funny you bring that up, because I was bringing that up in the 4 o'clock hour. The fans down in Baton Rouge feel like LSU has more talent on paper than Alabama does right now.
I think, I don't know about that, but it's up there. Like,
no, it's not me saying that. That's what they think and believe. But hey, if they believe it, you know, that could be contagious there. It could have some rub off feelings there with the football team.
Well, they've got the best secondary in college football, probably. They've got all Americans all over their defense, and they've got. I know LSU gets a lot of flack for its inability to get the ball to its receivers, but LSU does have one of the best receiving corps in football, and Joe Burrow. This is the first time in like 10 years, I feel like, or maybe since Zach Mettenberger, that we haven't had LSU quarterback concerns entering the season. It feels like LSU's kind of got everything. So we'll see. They do have to go to Alabama. We're going to find out early about LSU. They got Texas at week two in Austin.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up about the quarterback question because, you know, we talk about the players that are representing all 14 schools, and like this year, 9 of the 14 schools have their quarterbacks showing up, but usually the case is, and the problem is that there's still a quarterback battle going on. But you bring up LSU, Joe Burrow will be there, and I'm trying to remember the last time, if this will be the 12th year that I've covered the SEC Media Days, and I'm thinking Zach Mettenberger might be the only other one ever during that stretch.
Yeah, I mean, you know better than me. That's probably true. I know, you know, when LSU was contending for national titles in, like, the 2011 season. They had that two-quarterback dance going. I think Joe Burrow could captivate a few hearts down there in Hoover this week. That guy's cocky. He's got some swag.
He reminds me of Chad Kelly, the former quarterback at Ole Miss. Same kind of attitude, but you can't help but like them. When you're sitting down and visiting with them, it kind of rubs off on you, and if it rubs off on you, you can imagine how that rubs off on your teammates, especially they're in the huddle with you.
Yeah, I think that's a great comparison. He's kind of the ultimate X factor in all of college football this season, because I think when you look at LSU quarterback, you know, you look at Joe Burrow, and he's he can run, but he's not Kyler Murray. So you look at him, you're like, oh, he's probably a game manager, but I think he's better than that. And I think LSU kind of likes to rally around him. LSU's up there as far as most intriguing teams in football.
I mean, when you think about the RPO offense kind of thing, I mean, and you're seeing LSU doing that, my first thought was just like you. Well, he doesn't remind me of Kyler Murray, but then again, he doesn't have to be that. I mean, if you're not, you know, keeping the quarterback honest, in this case, Joe Burrow honest, if he reels off, you know, 8 to 12 yards, I mean, that's first down, and here we are gearing up again with a new set of downs. I mean, that's just as important when you're thinking about moving the chains as somebody where they're just relying on you to pass the ball.
Yeah. I mean, he's a tough runner, too. Maybe he's going to be his own worst enemy at times, but he doesn't shy away from contact. I don't see him slide. He doesn't get out of bounds. He'd like to bowl a defender over and kind of look back at his teammates and fire him up. So, and LSU's got two really good freshman running backs, too. John Emery Jr. is going to be a household name by November, I think. So, LSU's a little scary.
Trey Scott joining us again. All right, here's the thing. You know, if Nick Saban had not won conference titles, had not had any national championships to his credit, is it safe to say his personality would wear thin on some of the members of the media covering him? I bring it up because I look at a team that everybody always feels like, this is finally the year. There's a team I'm getting ready to bring up from the Big Ten Conference. I don't even have to mention the guy's name because I'm pretty sure you'll nail it by creating that. But Jim Harbaugh with Michigan. Everybody thinks that, finally, this will be the year that Michigan breaks through the glass ceiling and they'll be one of the four playoff teams. Every time we start really believing that, if you're a fan of the Wolverines, they find a way to let you down.
Yeah, I had a feeling you were going there. And you're right. We have, I feel like the last three falls, there's been a time each season where Michigan's been in the thick of the playoff race and blown it. Last year, you know, humiliated against Ohio State. 2 years ago, they lose at Iowa. I think this is the year for Michigan. Right now, if you were like, hey, who's in your playoff? I put Michigan in there. They have Ohio State at home. They have Michigan State at home. They have Iowa at home. People are raving about Josh Gattis, the new offensive coordinator who worked under Nick Saban for a bit at Alabama, also worked at Penn State. They think he's going to unlock Shea Patterson. And, you know, people here listening here right now, SEC country, Shea Patterson at Ole Miss, he was kind of like a Johnny Manziel light. And at Michigan, he kind of gets there and they sterilize him. You're going to go under center and you're going to be a pro style. That's not Shea Patterson's game. So I think Josh Gattis, new offensive coordinator, spreading Shea Patterson out. They've got a great core of receivers. Their defense, they lose a lot, but they still got NFL talent, one of the best DCs in football. I will say this, though. You know, you ask, is this the year for Michigan and Jim Harbaugh? It better be.
Absolutely.
His act's wearing thin. I know he's not out there in social media as much as he used to be. He's not taking fights with Kirby Smart. He's not walking around shirtless at football camps. He's kind of keeping a lower profile. But Michigan fans, if Jim Harbaugh doesn't beat Ohio State this year, I would believe he's on the hot seat entering the 2020 season. As crazy as that sounds, he's probably one of the best coaches in football, but you want to see results, and he hasn't delivered yet.
Well, at least last year, you know, the big problem was he was accumulating a lot of wins against the Maryland's and Wisconsin's and things like that. If you're at Michigan, they expect you to beat Penn State, Michigan State, and Ohio State. At least he got two out of the three last year. Remember going into that Ohio State game, we're talking about a team that only lost once the entire year, and that was the opening week on the road against Notre Dame. And so, I totally agree with you about Shea Patterson. I liked him a lot at Ole Miss. I've had a chance to sit down and visit with him. And to me, I thought he was going to be, if they allowed him to be himself at Michigan, I really had high expectations for him. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do this year for the Wolverines.
Yeah, I kind of felt like last year was a wasted year. As you said, they didn't let him be himself. And I think Jim Harbaugh took a tough look in the mirror this offseason, parts ways with Pep Hamilton, his longtime friend and offensive coordinator, gets a new guy in. I just, if I'm a Michigan fan, they haven't beaten Ohio. They beat Ohio State once in 14 of the last 15 years. Maybe Michigan fans have outsized expectations. I don't know. But they need to do it this year. And they better. I mean, their opportunity is there. Ohio State's transitioning. New head coach, new quarterback in Justin Fields, who is mega talented but hasn't proven anything yet. This is Michigan's year in the Big Ten.
When you look at the Pac-12, it's a conference that likes to gripe about the fact, hey, we play 9 conference games. Look at these conferences that only play 8. But then again, you look at the fact that there are 9 conference games with teams in the Pac-12, and then you don't play anybody in your non-conference portion of the schedule from top to bottom when you look at it from a whole. So, stop the belly aching. With that said, certainly this year when we're thinking about the Pac-12, is it Oregon, Washington, and that's it? I'm still trying to figure out why we're not talking about the same. There's two things that really mystify me. First, the fact that Tennessee, in the SEC for a decade has been mediocre when you look at the entire canvas of work there. And the same thing with the USC. With the rich area there, with all the recruits, I don't understand why USC is not in the national championship picture each and every year either.
Well, USC's toast. Their schedule until mid-October is hellacious. Notre Dame, Stanford, BYU at BYU, Fresno State in week one. I think Clay Helton's gone by November.
Yeah, but think about what you just said. They have Fresno State. They've got Stanford. This is USC. I understand Stanford's been good for a decade. This is USC. This is one, when you think about rich college football traditions, we're talking about, and this is the 150th year of college football, right? For 100 years, you could talk about successes there at USC. That's the part where, Stanford, you got a decade to match with that, but as well as I do, is what have you done for us lately, especially when you're talking about, 12 and 13-year-olds who are watching, this particular program over 4 or 5 years before they decide where they're going to play their college football.
Yeah, well, USC has a pull, obviously, and you can get anyone you want if you're the Trojans from Southern California. And all you need to win a national championship is right there in Southern California. Clay Helton's a really nice guy, whatever. 5-7's not going to get it done. The years he won 10 games or more, he had Sam Darnold. I think they're an intriguing team because new offensive coordinator Grant, the Tech quarterback, kind of Mike Leach it up down there. JT Daniels is a good quarterback. They got a great receiving core. And I mentioned the schedule, and I said it's tough, and I threw out some usual cupcakes. But they also go to Washington, and then they have to host Utah the week before. I don't know how USC survives that early portion of the schedule above 500, and I feel like if that's the case, Clay Helton probably just gets handed his walking papers. And then, who knows? Urban Meyer comes in, and the Trojans certainly have the talent to contend for the college football playoff any year. It's the coaching has been, subpar.
Yeah, but the part of what you just said, though, that would be like saying, well, for people making excuses for, say, a mediocre Alabama team, well, they do have to go to Ole Miss, and they have to play Mississippi State. That is similar to what you just said about USC with Utah and Washington, because USC, just because they are USC, they should be able to, going back to, there's certain teams that just getting off the bus, they've already got a team beat just because of who they are. USC is supposed to be that. I still look back and see a USC that's like, they're like still sitting on a pedestal. Unfortunately, they're like, I always talk about great, beautiful mansions you see on settings in movies. But if you're actually there when they were making the movie, if you open up the door, all there are is just some sticks holding up the front part because there's nothing in when you open up the door. That's what USC has become with regards to their football program.
Well, I certainly understand that. I'm a Texas alum. I've watched that team for the last 10 years, with the exception of last year, not be who it should be. The reality, though, is USC had no offensive line last year, no running game, no defense, and it's the coach. It's USC on the uniform, you know, the song girls, all that stuff, but that is not a USC football team. They have stockpiled it with, I like your mansion analogy, because it's window dressing talent. You've got the quarterback, you've got the receivers. You don't have anything else. So I don't think Clay Helton's going to get it done there. And until they get a new head coach in there, maybe an Urban Meyer, then the reality for USC is that you're going to lose to Utah, who is the best team in the Pac-12 South and maybe the best team in the Pac-12 period. And you're also going to lose to Washington, who is going to battle it out with Oregon to win the Pac-12 North. USC is not in a position to contend for a Pac-12 championship. And that flies in the face of everything we would think about USC, but it aligns with the poor job that Clay Helton's done.
By the way, you brought up Texas, and before we let you go, Texas, Tom Herman, are you buying, or do you feel like, not this year? And then what about Florida State and the Willie Taggart era there down in Tallahassee?
All right, I'll go quick on those. So Texas, I'm buying Tom Herman, absolutely. I think this year, I think they still might be a year away from making the playoff, just because Oklahoma has Jalen Hurts and Texas has to play LSU in week two.
And by the way, before you say something about Florida State, I'm just going to bring it up. I'm a Florida State grad.
Okay. Well, nowhere to go but up for the Seminoles. And, I mean, you could certainly –
I don't want them to go up under this with the tech.
Okay.
With bringing in somebody with the last name Bryles down there, I have brought it up over and over. They've sold their soul. They don't care. They'll do anything to win games down there now.
Yeah.
I hope they go 1-11 this year.
Well, if the offensive line doesn't get figured out, maybe they will. But that's a tough situation. They will potentially put up points. I don't know. Like, what? Florida State's got a lot of talent, but the cultural issues seem, before you even add a Bryles to the situation. I like that Bleacher Report article, I believe, by Matt Hayes. It's kind of felt like a Florida State spin job where they sort of put everything on Jimbo.
I saw that.
As far as classroom issues and quarterback recruiting and quarterback development, it's kind of a mess down there.
I'll just say that folks that have the privilege of riding on the planes with the players, hearing the conversations before and after ball games, that's not a team down there in Tallahassee, and that has nothing to do with Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah, so you're hoping this is last year for the Packers.
Oh, I hope they clean house. Honestly, clean house totally.
Well, he's definitely on the hot seat, so you might get your wish.